This week on RSBNB Update, pull up as we discuss some dank PEG changes, including some improvements to treasure trails. Are they lit or big yikes? We also talk about how hardcore Iron Man was yeeted from the game and share early thoughts on the beach. This is RSBNB Update, episode 786, recorded Wednesday, July 15th, 2020. Okay, Zoomer. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. This week, Tanis is off doing some family fun adventures, as he put it, so he's not available this week. He's doing the best he can to have a little mini vacation in, of course, the new and modified world that we all live in. But nonetheless, Sirion is here on the panel with me this week to fill in for Tanis. You know, we're just gonna have a fun time. Based on the way the notes look, we're gonna have a really fun time when it gets to pick of the week, aren't we?
I figured we should take this opportunity to nerd out a bit. Yeah.
Sirion, of course, is a member of Clan Quest, just like I am, and many of our other panels are. You can find him in game, of course, at Sirion. I don't know if you have an origin story like some people do on this podcast, which is rather unfortunate. Did you know that one of our old hosts, Paul, or PFK99's first time he came on the show because of Valentine's Day contest, and he got married to another guy, and that was our winner for that Valentine's Day contest? He got married in RuneScape.
That sounds like a really interesting origin story. Yeah, I think my origin story is not quite that interesting.
No, it's not. I'd say it's probably one of the commonalities with me, whether it comes down to, of course, the Clan Quest side, the computer science side, the Mac OS and iPhone side, at least it used to be. But that's a topic for later. This week in RuneScape, as they call it, fun fact here for everybody, back in the day, this podcast was almost named This Week in RuneScape.
That's such a shame. You could have sued Jagex and end up at the end of the queue, basically.
Yeah. of course, this is the time podcasts were getting going. And, of course, we had This Week in Tech from the twit.tv network. We also – I forget, there was also some other This Week in podcast that was big at the time. So This Week in RuneScape, of course, was an option that we could have went with. We didn't because I was told that we should be more original and go with Update, which, you know, I think has stuck and is something that people just keep in their mind because, you know, you're getting your RuneScape update at the end of each week, and it's provided by RSBNB, so RSBNB Update. But in any case, this week, Ninja Strike 8, the recon PEG, and, you know, if you look at the news post instead, it is, of course, titled This Week in RuneScape. I was under the impression that perhaps they just should have titled this Ninja Strike 8 Recon PEG rather than This Week in RuneScape for the news post title.
You know, perhaps, but for a very long time, news posts have been more than just talking about the update, right?
Yeah.
Like, much to my dislike, at least half the post was about, you know, all the community events and live streams. And, you know, if you look at it now, you know, there's like so many sections in the community tab, which I'll be honest about, I don't care much for.
Yeah. And you can skip over it.
So yeah, they were always sort of tagged on to like the game update. And yeah. Well, we have to be honest here. We haven't had much of a game update in the past few weeks, and we've had plenty of weeks where the community part of the news post was probably larger than the actual news part of it.
Yeah.
So I guess they're going for a bit more of a neutral approach here, which means they can move that focus around a bit more easily. That's at least my guess. Yeah.
Yeah, my own only concern about this is the Google juice that they get from this if they were naming it in relation to the week's update. But I mean, if they're not going to do that, I'll happily take that Google juice instead.
it's interesting, like looking at the styling of this news post, Ninja Strike 8 Recon Pag is still a larger font than the actual page title. Oh, now I got to check the source.
Yeah, I actually just pulled that up. That's an H3, while the main title is an H2, but it's a larger font.
Oh, that's interesting.
Of course, this is on the HTML side for anybody wondering. And this is the new news post format. Three tabs, game news, patch notes, and community. Inside the community tab, you have the JMod live streams that were this week.
Fascinating. The little headers are also H3. They're on the same level.
Oh, and did you notice that when you click each different tab, the background of the page changes? For some reason? That's odd. See,
I don't get that.
Really? Okay. I get a little
horizontal. Use a modern browser, man.
I'm using Chrome. Anyways. Community tab. JMod live streams. Featured streamer. RuneScape is on TikTok. And,
oh, God.
And I'm going to say this. And you know,
sling them a follow, daddy-o.
That's right. That's what they said for Gen Z. RuneScape is coming to TikTok, and they've got a hefty bank of memes to show off. So if you, too, are down with the kids, then you'd better beat feet. Beat feet? Beat feet to our profile and sling us a follow, daddy-o.
I've never felt older than reading this, I think.
And to be fair, I think you and I, when is the start of Gen Z?
I think officially I'm the millennial generation.
I know, but when does Gen Z start?
I have no idea, actually. Gen Z, mid to late 1990s as starting birth years and early 2010s as ending birth years.
Oh, okay.
And millennials are... Oh, okay. So Zoomers, they call us... I like that. Zoomers, or Generation Z, is generally considered 1997 to 2012.
Okay. That's not definitely...
Well, millennials are 81 to 96.
Okay. Lovely.
So, yeah, I'm towards the latter half of that.
Anyways, TikTok memes aside, there's also Instagram AR filters for your favorite colored party hat that you could wear, or you can transform yourself into the wise old man. And video of the week, and of course the usual pink skirts. But you guys don't want to hear about that. You guys want to hear about the PAG update, the recon PAG for the Ninja team. So let's jump right into that one. TikTok aside, which, you know, I highly encourage everybody to give a second thought before using that based on our tech news a few weeks back.
If you want to sling someone a follow, you should go to the RSBNB channel on YouTube and hit the subscribe button. Daddy-o.
I wonder what people are going to think of us here doing this.
They're going to think we're old men making fun of the younger generation.
But we're not really.
Oh, but I am.
We should have had someone young on the show this week. Anyways, Meerkat scrolls. So starting off with this one, previously, you know, you could only get the Meerkat scrolls by getting them from a clue scroll. And now you can actually convert them the same way you can convert any other pouch to a scroll. And as usual, one pouch will give you 10 Meerkat scrolls, which is the fetch casket ability. And prior to this update, these fetch casket scrolls had just, you know, shot up like a rocket in terms of their grand exchange price. So they're they were really expensive before then, and hopefully this will provide some relief on that side of the market. So this is something that is, of course, very well appreciated by the Clue Scroll community.
Yeah, somebody made a really good point earlier this week as well, that for Iron Man, it can make a lot of difference.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. Especially, you know, level 3 skillers, because when you're doing the Clue Scrolls, and if you get a wizard or something that pops up, and if you use the Meerkat instead, it won't pop up, meaning you don't need to fight it.
Oh, I use Meerkats all the time, because okay. I am lazy as heck. I can't be bothered fighting those wizards.
Yeah, you know,
so I use it all the time.
You know, I brought them out once because I have them stacking up on there, and then what I tried to do instinctively, and this is a good change on that front, is because I actually tried to go to a summoning obelisk and convert one of my pouches to scrolls, and it didn't work. So I just, you know, okay, I'd much rather use the scroll than not. So I never used the Meerkat following.
Yeah, also another advantage of using Meerkats is they add 5 to your scan range when you do scan pulls, which makes it can actually make a big difference. Sort of depends on the location, but it saves a bit of hassle.
I'm actually enjoying the Clue Scroll Yak Track challenges.
I ran out of Masters, and I don't like doing Elites, so... Yeah.
You know, fun little clue tip on this. I was actually talking to Derp about these clue updates this week. He's a clan quester, and, you know, he said that easies are actually a really good thing to do money-wise, because you can just smash those out so quick that you can get a huge number of fortunates per hour with them, and it's actually beneficial to downgrade your mediums to easies.
Interesting.
So... the way it is, of course, hards are still the best, but easies are also good too. And I guess it's personal preference if you want to do elite. Do you have the totem active? The Anachronia?
No, I don't think I have it.
Okay. That one helps a lot too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really frustrating when you get a super long clue and you get like a really, really shitty reward in the end.
Yeah.
But
The next thing
they're okay.
Next thing they chose to talk about was the War Priest armor drop rate. This, of course, goes back to the World Events 1 and 2, where you had the various War Priest sets, either Ceridoan, Zamorak, or Armadyl, Bandos, and you were able to get these as a reward for participating in that event. But following that, these items were moved to the God Wars dungeon with a rather obscene drop rate. Now, what this means is that anybody who wanted to get this armor today had to spend a lot more time at one of the God Wars areas in order to try and get this armor. But they boosted that this week. Now, I have a question for you, and I made this discovery by keenly observing clan chat. What do you think the primary purpose of this patch note is?
I mean, I would think that, you know, it's one of the few hybrid armor sets in the game right
now. Very good, a piece of armor set, tier 75.
I think the only alternative is the Tuska set, for which you need to do the Tuska event still.
Yeah.
Which is, I wouldn't say that's necessarily the most fun thing to grind. I think you need other people to do it with as well. So, at least if I remember correctly.
All right.
So my guess is just making that content actually more realistically available.
All right.
To people. So that would be my primary reason. Like, all those new players in the game, you know, you want to make sure that there's no content that's unreasonably out of reach. Like, why would you spend all that time on War Priest if there's, all the things you can get much easier. So it I think it very much turned, like, older players who were playing during World Event 1, they're past the point where War Priest is very useful.
Yeah.
And for older players who started playing since, War Priest was very hard to obtain, which basically turns it into that content. So this sort of resurrects that a tiny bit.
All right. There is a hidden benefit to this for people who are just, you know, wanting to not necessarily use the armor and whatnot. With this boosted drop rate, anybody who is looking for Zamorak, Ceridoman, Bandos, or Armadil components, you can disassemble this armor and get those components guaranteed.
Hmm.
So what this means is that the hidden benefit to this is that all these components become a lot easier to get.
Is that a problem?
I don't know. And see, I don't know if that's a problem on this. And that's not something I'm going to make an observation of right now, because, you know, I mean, if you look at what Zamorak components do, they're used for the Impatient, Devoted, and Imsold perks. And if we look at Ceridoman components, those are used for Spendthrift and Devoted. If we move to Bandos, for example, Genocidal and Devoted. And these perks I'm naming off aren't ones that, you know, people are dying to use, except for maybe Imsold. Armadil ones do give access to Precise, which, I mean, given the way the ancient gizmos work, sure, Precise 6, that's one of the old meta traits, and you're going to want to go after it from that perspective. But the point I want to make with this is that, you know, this is billed as one change here in the news post for people who are leveling up and making it easier to get this armor. But this is an entirely different change behind the scenes for people who use this armor and disassemble it for the invention components, which isn't mentioned at all, and is a fairly big deal, I think, personally, in terms of just making these components easier to get. And I don't know if it was an oversight in not mentioning it, or if this was slipped by when they were making these balancing changes. And that's something I'd be interesting to hear a little bit more about. I don't necessarily think it's too overpowered, but it's there.
So I'm looking at, for example, the Subjugation set, which I think is probably one of the main sources of Zamorak components.
Yeah.
Right now, I don't see them like starting to drop after this update comes out.
And I mean, to be fair,
we're already going down though, so it's hard to see if there's any effect from this update.
Yeah, and to be fair, for anybody who wants Armadil components, you're just going to go sit there and you're going to camp Kriara, and you get them quite honestly. Quickly. So, and you know, this is just another way of adding them in, and hence why I don't think this is an overpowered change. I just think it's interesting that the biggest benefit to people who aren't leveling up was left out of the news post and not mentioned, and I'd be curious to know if that was intentional or if it was an oversight.
Do we need Jax to give away all the secrets of the game though?
Well,
like, isn't it sort of up to, like, they've given all the information that, like, they've not even said why they do it, right?
Exactly.
They just say they do it. It's up to us to figure out, do we get an advantage by this?
Yeah.
Like, if you look at this, if you look at this change in the context of gold components, it now means that somebody who didn't play part of the world events, like world events,
is going to be able to get them easier.
Is going to get the same rate of those components as a player who did. So in a way, it's just fairer.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a new mechanic to getting god components. It's just
more, like, fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hidden familiars previously, summoned familiars would have to be dismissed in certain areas of the game. And in practice, of course, that means you need to resummon familiars. And they've already introduced areas where they just hide the familiars. And this includes areas such as the Lumbridge Market, for example. And after this week, more areas have been added to this functionality, including the Falador Party Room and Runespan. You'll still be able to see your familiars, but they'll disappear for everyone else.
So this is really nice. I ran into this when doing my yak track clues for one of the masters I needed to go on the half-in agility course, and I needed to dismiss my
right.
meerkats.
Yeah.
So this is really nice. There's a nice synergy between this update and the meerkats update, because you don't have to continuously dismiss your meerkats and get them back. You would end up with more pouches, which you can now turn into scrolls. Sort of, it all adds up.
Yeah, and it's a nice synergy for that, too. They say five more areas. They mention the Falador Party Room and Runespan, but they don't mention the other ones. And, you know, you already mentioned one of them, the Heffin Agility Course area, so that's good. Now, there's a big one for the PVM community. You can purchase an Adrenaline Cooldown Reset at War's Retreat for 2,000 boss kills. And what this does is that, so say you're out killing a boss and you use an adrenaline potion and then you get the adrenaline cooldown. When you go back to War's Retreat after you kill that boss and, you know, you bank up and you use the bonfire if necessary and then you prepare to go back through the portal, and you're going to use the adrenaline crystal to build up your adrenaline. And when you do that now, if you purchase this, it will reset your adrenaline potion cooldown when you do that. So you're effectively getting a clean slate when you walk through that boss portal.
Yeah, this one, I have to admit, I'm a bit confused by this one.
Yeah, and you know, I was too. I had to ask how it worked for this, because I mean, it's 2,000 boss kills. You're going to need to purchase it, and you know, I'm not at that point. And, you know, it's kind of ambiguous exactly what adrenaline cooldown reset means.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand the actual mechanics now, but I'm still trying to grasp why this made it into the game. So I think one of the criticisms I thought of, and I've actually seen people voice, is, you know, this is really just, you know, indirectly, it's just going to give people more DPS, right? It's just making PVMers make even more money because they don't have to wait anymore. So, is that really necessary? Don't people make enough money out of PVMing already? Like, that was the first criticism I heard. Which
yeah. And, you know, honestly, they think they're a little bit hard done by. We were talking with David last time he was on the show, and I think it was, he said, a meta setup for Virago has a death cost of about 12 mil.
Yeah.
If you die. Or no, it was just a meta setup for anything. It might have been something you could use at Telos too. About 12 mil if you die.
Right.
So, and, you know, this is the way the PBMers view it, is that, hey, hold it there. We're not making that much money because we have all these death costs associated with it.
Then don't die.
Yeah. Then don't die.
No, but, I don't see PBMers dying all the time, right? Like, there is this risk involved, but once you sort of get the hang of a boss, you shouldn't die very often. If at all. So, but okay, maybe I'm simplifying it, right? Let's just I don't want to continue down this line because it's only going to show how ignorant I am about the PVM world. But in a way, it's really I think it is a fair assessment, right? Like, do they really need that extra DPS, even if indirectly? That was, of course, quickly challenged by the PVM, as you said, but it's not actually that big of a deal. Like, going back to War's Retreat, banking up and doing all that stuff, you're already spending a lot of time anyway, which is fine. So it doesn't make that big of a difference. But then why do we have the update in the first place if it doesn't make a big difference?
Exactly.
So there's this duality where people are saying it doesn't really matter, yet it's still made it in the game. So I find it a really hard thing. It sounds like it's a quality of life thing, which I accept. Good quality of life is good. But it's also a quality of life thing that indirectly makes it even faster to get kills. And I think that always needs to be met with some scrutiny.
Which leads to power creep.
In a way, everything that makes a boss kill easier is quality of life, quote unquote. But we don't want to make, like, the fact that you need to work for it and that there's a challenge involved and that there's a risk involved, like this death cost, is the reason why it's so profitable. So that's why I really don't understand. I find it hard to understand this update. Like,
yeah,
well, nobody really seems to be honest about why it exists.
Exactly, and you know, like you said, we can go back to the same point you said. Well, hey, this is for you, the players, to figure out. We feel these are balancing changes that needed to go in. And I'm going to say, and I'm going to use the very famous catchphrase, but wait, there's more. The power burst of overkill is no longer a power burst, but it's now going to be called an adrenaline renewal potion. A power burst vial will no longer be needed to create this potion. Everything else remains the same about it, including ingredients and recipes. You can turn this into 6-dose flasks, and when you drink an adrenaline potion, it will now only trigger the adrenaline cooldown and not the power burst cooldown. So, you can use what used to be known as the power burst of overkill, which boosts your adrenaline in a fight. It will trigger your adrenaline potion cooldown, but you can also combine this with any other power burst that you want now.
Mm-hmm.
Which, for PVM, you have the power burst of vitality that doubles your life points. You also have the power burst of feats, which makes your familiar moves cost no special move points for 10 seconds. And, you know, there you have it. Two different power bursts that you can now use that previously you had to choose between three.
Yeah. Yeah, So, this is... again, I'm going to show my ignorance of there.
And, you know, there's also the adrenaline potion, and Tycho has pointed out that previously you could have two adrenaline bursts. You could have the potion and the power burst. So there's some give and some take here, but go ahead.
Yeah, like, I think, again, pure speculation, that, you know, using the adrenaline... the power burst of overkill, to me, it sounds like something people would almost default to, which means the other power bursts weren't seeing much use.
Yeah.
And this might be their attempt to take the one better option, move it away from the power, so that you don't have, like, if one of the power bursts is more useful than the others, then you're never going to spend the power burst cooldown on something that is way more situational. That is a guess of what could be going on. Like, people
and
might be like, why would I use the power burst of vitality if I can use this overkill one? And this might raise the value of the other power bursts. But we need to see how, like, all these things sort of intermix. So it's of course really hard to say how this will affect kill counts and kill times.
Yeah, and see, this is exactly what David said when I had my discussion with him this week on this, is he said, yeah, this makes the other power burst viable. See, so you hit the nail on the head there,
and that's
what it sounds like from the design perspective.
That is not necessarily a bad thing.
No, it's not.
We just, I just hope that, you know, do they still have that combat council? I assume they do.
Yeah.
Like, I just hope that this is something that, you know, the combat council keeps an eye on and, like, you know, looks at how is this affecting, you know, the wider game, and do we need further changes?
Oh, here we are. Yes. we were seeking clarification on, of course, the areas for the pets. These include the Mage Training Arena, the Dargish Khan Agility Course, the Heffen Course, the Falador Party Room, and Runespan. We already mentioned two of those.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Clues, of course, this is a big one as well for clues in addition to the meerkats. Globetrotter shorts will now signal Yuri instead of performing an emote, which will speed up emote clues whenever a player is in combat. So what this means is that you'll now be able to emote when you're in combat if you have the Globetrotter shorts.
I should actually look at the shop.
Yeah.
Probably have a bunch of points
yeah.
by now.
Yeah.
I should actually get some of the items.
Yeah, I've just got enough to get the chest piece. I think that's the one I want to get first.
All right.
All right. So we're going to move on into the general patch notes right now. But I think I have two things before we do that. First, hardcore Iron Man characters will now default down to regular Iron Man characters rather than being permanently locked out of them when they die. And this will happen whether the account owns additional life items such as the Jar of Divine Light. It'll happen regardless of that.
Yeah, it sounds controversial.
It is from a gameplay perspective, but it makes 100% sense from the business perspective, I think.
I mean, in a way, that being said, you know, if you lose your account, you lose all the you also lose all the membership days attached to it.
Yeah.
Which are days you're not using the game and you're paying Jagex for no reason at that point. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And if you're really keen about playing, you'll just make a new account, pay membership of that, boom, free money for RuneScape. So,
hence why I said this seems more like a business decision than a gameplay decision.
Yeah, but now all of a sudden you keep your account and you keep your membership days, so you're not going to spend more time on you're not going to spend another membership on a new Iron Man account. You're just going to continue playing on your existing one. That being said, maybe there's less people who now quit. You know, you might lose your Iron Man and literally just quit RuneScape, which might have happened if you can continue.
Which would be
it.
Bad.
That being said, isn't the whole thing of the whole thing about hardcore is it's permanent.
Yeah, that's what it was supposed to be, so it kind of removes that aspect of it.
Yeah, like if you play hardcore Minecraft, you know, that save game is gone once you die. Like it's absolutely permanent. That's the whole idea behind Iron Man. So, hardcore, sorry. So it does seem a bit like, you know, that taking that away, like, I don't see a reason anymore why you would now play a normal Iron Man. You can always just flaunt your hardcore status around until you accidentally die, which seems fairly meaningless now.
Yeah.
And I wonder if the hardcore Iron Man community had anything to say in this matter.
Because you get two extra lives, potentially, by way of the Divine Coin, or you did. First one was at 1,000 total level. The second one was at 1,600. And you gain that extra life. But the Jar of Divine Light, you had to purchase for 100,000 coins, and it would allow you to make that move down to regular Iron Man at any point. And this also lets Iron Man make its way move down to a regular character, too.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I didn't know that was an option.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So, in theory, what you can do with this is you can die as a hardcore Iron Man and then use your Jar of Divine Light to become a regular RuneScape player if you wanted to.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. In any case, we'll have to wait and see how this all shakes out. And, you know, you're right, there's a very important question. What's the point of hardcore after this? I mean,
it becomes, yeah, I don't know. It becomes, I find it, yeah, it's a bit of a weird status now. You know, it's just, it seems like you would default to it until you die. So it still has the same status, but it doesn't have the same risk involved.
Yeah, exactly. Alrighty. Let us move on to the rest of the patch notes then. There's something else I was going to mention, but I forgot about it. I don't know what that was. Hopefully it comes back to me at that point before we do that. Yeah, here it is. There's a special surprise waiting for all of us at the end of Desperate Measures. Just, you know, popped into the news post here right between when they're wrapping up PAGs and when they're talking about ninja challenges for the dojo.
Oh, I completely missed that.
Right?
Yeah, I completely missed that.
And not just a special surprise reward, a special surprise update waiting for you all at the end of Desperate Measures.
That is so weird. Okay. Sure. We'll see. It's not the new dig site. Let's
we know that much.
It's not a new dig site. Is it perhaps an archaeology D&D?
Would they do that, though, if you can't get double XP yet?
That's
unlikely.
Because
they want it to come in through the main XP to come in through the main methods of skilling?
That's a good point. Yeah, Gothixian caches didn't come until
way late.
Pretty late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, we'll see.
I think the itch is starting to build.
Let it be a surprise.
All right. Patch notes in general this week. Okay, we can move on now. We already talked about the Iron Man one, so that was the first thing that was mentioned. Telos's lesser anima bomb attack will no longer continue to damage players at the start of Phase 5. And, of course, this is in line with other patch notes we've seen with bosses where their effects end once you've cleared the phase. The messages informing you of an empty charge pack will now only appear if the player uses an augmented pickaxe with no invention charges. It's weird that it's only for the augmented pickaxe there and nothing else that this was a problem. Anyways.
Yeah, I don't really know what the only only is meant to refer to here.
Next up, you will now receive a Golden Castle Wars ticket during the Wanted quest, which can be added to your currency pouch. I think you had to play a game of Castle Wars for that quest, I think.
Oh, could be. I don't remember.
Yeah. And that kind of just goes to show the state of the castle, that Castle Wars and all those other mini games are in, unless they're on Spotlight. And based on our idea from last week regarding the mini game queue system, I actually did submit that to the dojo this week. So maybe it would be a complex thing, and I don't know if it'd be ninjas or beyond, but I submitted it anyways. Your polishing perk, if you have that on a pickaxe, can now upgrade sea salt to Elias sea salt. Which I think this is a big deal for anybody who's grinding the arc.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'd take polishing over anything else because of this. Granted, you know, if you have a level 20 pickaxe and you had polishing 4, that would take it from a 12% to a 13.2% chance of triggering.
But then, so polishing upgrades a resource to a higher tier when you get it, right?
Yeah.
But then, why would you ever do normal sea salt in the first place? Like, it doesn't make sense.
I mean, if you were just running it across it on an island, right? So
I would skip normal sea salt. I'd rather just generate a new island.
Okay. And see, that's the efficiency-minded aspect of us all coming in.
Yeah, fair enough.
It is now possible to access the wise old man's archaeology collection even while he's gallivanting in various quests. Good. That makes sense. Yeah. All scrimshaw buffs will now list the effects. Wonderful. The destroy and assault strength skills now correctly use their animations while following up with the greater barge attack skill. Make X interfaces now correctly navigate to the highest craftable tier of item and the corresponding skill.
Oh, that might be the problem I've been having with archaeology.
Oh?
So one of the problems I was having was whenever I had the Warforged soil in my inventory and I would start screening, it would still select the Armadyl, the Stormguard soil, even though I didn't have any in my inventory.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that might have been fixed now.
Weird. I've never had that problem with the soil.
I have it consistently.
Okay. Fixed an issue, or sorry, daily challenges that have been generated while on a free-to-play world will now give the correct XP if they're completed on a member's world, which is good for people who are upgrading. Mm-hmm. Fixed an issue that blocked keyboard inputs if the player closed the bug report system by opening a bank. You know, I think we got to talk about this because I don't know if you've reported a bug in game recently.
I reported the soil bug.
Okay. If you close the bug report interface and then reopen it, the cursor goes to whack. And it's really hard to report a bug about the bug report system when it does that, and you're trying to duplicate it.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, the bug report screen, you know, it's not great in the first place.
No, and, you know, anyways. Ninjas, fix the bug report system. There we go. The dual arena scoreboard will no longer display errors when players have long account names and high combat levels. Harvesting a single farming patch will no longer produce the message the patch bomb has no effect on the produce in the state. I never use patch bombs because I think there's many things in the farming skill that I consider blasphemy. So I never use these. But the sense that I'm getting on this is that it was just if you had a one single farming patch, you know, rather than, you know, the allotments and the herbs all spotted, it would just think that there was a problem with doing it with that one.
Mm-hmm. So
you will no longer automatically open a reward casket after digging it up during an elite treasure trail in the Lumbridge Swamp.
Spaghetti code!
Yay! And the Wushanko, the Ark achievement, no longer requires the following for completion. Ark,
so
Ancient Eastern Torter Portals, Ark Flippers, Ark Rewards, Ark Upgrading All the Waiko, and Ark Unlocking More of Waiko.
So, okay, what is the influence of this on, like, comp? Like, so let me actually... So, Wushanko the Ark.
Yeah, that's the name of the main achievement. And I believe that is required for comp.
So, did they... Does that mean that they removed comp requirements here? But they didn't really say so.
That's the way I'm leaning.
I'm trying to navigate the interface, but it's really hard. I think I already got the achievement. So let me unhide to complete it. Oh boy, it has all the quests as individual. No, so it has individual arc achievements as part of comp directly. Like, activate all the Torto portals. purchase or unlocks, like they're directly nested under completionist as a achievement.
So arc flippers would probably be in there then.
Yeah.
All right. Probably. So they didn't remove comp
requirements. I have the list mode enabled, so I don't actually see the names. Because you know the UI here is not the best.
And looking at the list of achievements for comp, I don't think it looks like the only ones you have to do for it is activate all the turtle portals.
No, I still have to unlock all the upgrades. That's still in the comp for me, at least.
Okay, fair enough. What section is that one under?
Oh, it just like I went to achievements, completionist, comp.
Okay, fair enough.
And then I showed my completed achievements and it shows up under there. Oh, yeah. Purchase the first tier of upgrades, purchase unlocks, and activate all turtle portals.
Yeah, so they're still there.
Those three are dead that I can see right now. Yeah,
so it doesn't change that. All right, good. And that's it for the patch notes this week. I don't believe there's anything.
So I wanted to follow up on the Wanted quest for Castle Wars.
All right.
I looked it up. So in the Wanted quest, there is a section where you have to chase Solas throughout the world. And each time you get an item, you need to go to the location of that item and do a scan there. One of the potential items you could get was a ticket. But it would not be added to your inventory because, of course, we used to have the other. I think we had a different ticket system for Castle Wars before. And a dialogue would only say that you found a ticket.
Oh, okay.
So it was really confusing about where to go. So now you actually get a golden Castle Horse ticket. So you know where to go. You get the actual item now. That's the
change
they've made.
Got it.
So you know where to go and scan. So, I mean, it's random what items you get. There's about a couple of dozen of them that you can get. It's just random and different player by player. So if you get a Castle Horse ticket, enjoy.
Wonderful.
It's probably better than a giant frog legs.
Yay. Oh, I did have a couple of other ones on the patch notes here. The breeding rabbits tutorial can now be completed in the player-owned farm.
Uh-huh.
Auto setup will now appear in the lobby before actually starting the game. Using the dungeon home teleport in Dungeoneering will no longer silence the music. An issue has been fixed in ED2, where the red dragons were able to attack through barriers in certain circumstances. And fixed an issue that prevented a cutscene in Desperate Times from ending. And fixed an issue which prevented subtitles from being displayed in the first cutscene of Desperate Times.
Somebody played through Desperate Times to write the story so far in News Post.
Yeah.
And I found two bugs.
Yeah. All right, but before we get on to that, speaking of quests, we had the semifinals for the World Cup of Quests was Dragon Slayer versus Sliske's Endgame, and Dragon Slayer has finally dethroned Sliske's Endgame.
Very nice.
I am so pleased about this. I don't know what people's big fascination was with Sliske's Endgame. It won 59-40.
I guess it was like it was a big deal. It was a finale. It put everything like to an end. Put all the gods there. There were a lot of juicy lore drops. You know, I get all of that, but the maze.
Yeah,
I didn't like the maze. I think, yeah, like the maze, it was so long, it's really hard to actually get any result, like any interesting result out of it.
It's hard to keep track of the story as you're moving through the maze, because you're so focused on getting on them through the maze.
Exactly, and like there's so many hidden factors that they built in about who wins and who you're racing against, like in the final, you know, head-to-head and all that stuff. And
only a handful of people went back and played it.
I mean, I went back and played it, I think. I think you need, like, I don't know why I replayed it. I replayed it for some reason, but I skipped the maze
yeah.
and the final battle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I did it to look at some of the cutscenes I missed, but yeah, no, I it wasn't a bad quest at all. I wouldn't say it was a bad quest. The maze was. I think I vented about the maze for a few weeks after it came out. It took me a really long time, but in the end, I think I used a guide for the maze because I was so annoyed with it. But it just Dragon Slayer was like an instant classic.
Yeah, exactly.
And
you were on the endgame quest with us, quest episode that December, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was you, me, and Colton, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Could be.
And you know how big of a mess that was before Christmas?
Mm.
I think it might have been the day before you left to go home.
It could have been.
But, you know, Dragon Slayer is just an instant classic, and it wins because of that for me. Plus, it also fits more into the realm of the traditional RuneScape quest model that we don't have anymore, that I feel is deeply lacking. I think the biggest thing that we could get from Desperate Measures, and I know this is a long stretch, is that if it played like a traditional RuneScape quest.
Oh, but it's not gonna.
I know.
Because if we don't do the right thing, and the right thing is probably predefined for us, instead of that we can choose it, the world will end. So, you know, that's just, yeah, it's not RuneScape for me.
Well, let's move on to the finals then of While Gothic Sleeps versus Dragon Slayer. And, you know, what perfect discussion to have than two clan quest members to discuss this one here. Currently, While Gothic Sleeps is winning 62-37.
That's a pretty big lead.
Yeah. I voted Dragon Slayer.
Yep, same here. Yeah, I think, While Gothic Sleeps, it was a really good quest, you know?
It was the first Grandmaster quest.
It was the first Grandmaster quest. It was very unique for that time. It got close to, like, the world ending stakes.
Yes.
But, you know, it
and I wonder if we, like, if we knew what was happening and we went through this, like, you know how when you read a book or you watch a movie for the second time and you know the ending, you know the sequel, I wonder if there was foreshadowing in While Gothic Sleeps to the events of Ritual of the Maj... Well, I know there's definitely Ritual of the Maj'rod foreshadowing, but to the Sliske arc foreshadowing. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's in there.
Who knows? That's if we play it.
Yeah, that would be fun. That would be fun. But, you know, we don't have replayable quests because they did that for Sliske's endgame and only a handful of people played it. And when they
because who wants to replay that quest?
Well, no. And I mean, even when they put out the beta server for everybody to replay the Myrex series before they wrap that one up, only 13 people did that. And I knew three of them.
Wow. Yeah. No, I think While Gothic Sleeps was one of these big quests. One of we see a lot of right now. But it required basically, it had the highest quest requirements ever. It required basically every other quest to be completed in the game.
It also brought out the coveted dragon plate body.
Yes, like, it was justified to be big stakes. It was justified.
Like, if you go through the list of requirements for While Gothic Sleeps, it was Defender of Rock, Dream Mentor, Hand in the Sand, Legends Quest, yes. King's Ransom, Path of Glaufrey. So it's not even just these ones. It's also the gnomes. Tears of Gothic, like, Wanted.
Exactly. Like, you basically needed to do, like, the Varric storyline, basically, all the way to the end. Or, actually, all the way to the end. You needed to do the White Knights quest series all the way to the end. You needed to do the Fremenic quest series all the way to the end. Like, Dream Enter, like, there's a lot of quests that come before that. Like, I think we forget, but, you know, it starts with Fremenic Trials, then there's a bunch of quests, then you actually get access to Lunar Island.
Yeah.
Then there is, like, Dream Enter, which itself is a pretty hefty quest if you're, like, a mid-level player. Because the combat was... I remember the combat being pretty tricky. Yeah. It probably isn't anymore, let's be honest. I mean, I fought the monsters in Dominion Tower. It's not that big of a deal anymore. But, you know, back in the day, it was a big deal. So, adding all of this up, you know, while Gothic Sleeps was... It was basically getting your 99 questing at when it came out.
Yeah.
Like, it was big.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing I'd like to do, and I'm not saying I'm going to do this, I think it'd be fun to do a chronological playthrough of all these quests. Like, do a chronological playthrough of the Elf series, do a chronological playthrough of the Zaros and later Majrod and ultimately Sliske arc series and so on and so forth. But you know how much work that is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something I'm going to talk to you about this after the air that I think is going to be actually really interesting that we need to do. And you know, don't worry about this, folks. This is nothing for the podcast at all. It's just an idea I had offhand. So remind me after we finish up about this.
We'll bring that up.
But yeah,
but Dragon Slayer is the same.
Yeah,
in a way,
except it's a different era.
It's also for free to play. It requires basically all the free to play quests. It is the epic conclusion to your free to play series. And you know, it, at least for me, when I got that, because I didn't get members until my return to RuneScape after many, many years. Though I had finished Dragon Slayer at that point, I think. Dragon Slayer, it almost feels as the end of your first chapter as an adventure, right? It feels you've achieved something big. You're now ready for the bigger world, which is the members' world.
Like, yeah, and plus
that's how it feels. It's such an important milestone.
It really is, because it also unlocked the anti-dragon shield. But back in the day, in 2003, people, you know, it was very hard to get people to smith a rune plate body because we didn't have the Grand Exchange. Very few people had 99 smithing, which you needed to make a rune plate body. You got a rune plate body from this quest.
Yeah. You needed this quest to wear a rune plate body in the first place.
Yeah, but that's not the case anymore.
That's not the case anymore, but it was back in the day.
Yeah.
You could figure out who was the quester and not by seeing who was wearing rune chain bodies.
Yeah.
That was the good old days.
It really was.
But like that, yeah. I think both of these quests are good. I just like Dragon Slayer more because while Gothic Sleeps, it's not its fault, but it has sort of become the symbol of, you know,
kicking us off into the high stakes era. Yeah. All right.
Like, I would have liked another World Gothic Sleeps, but then hopefully with an equal lead up to it. I wanna go help and do people's laundry, or, you know, kill a big spider in a basement, or, you know, something like that. Like that was nostalgia.
It really was, and I think that's partially why we're voting for Dragon Slayer. But
yes,
it's time to look towards the future, and we got this post called Desperate Measures, the story so far. Now, this is a bit of a summary here on this in the form of a news post. A needle has been stolen. The Elder Gods are growing impatient, and all seems lost. And as they say, desperate times call for desperate measures.
Oh, they must have been waiting for 2 years to make that reference.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's interesting as well because there is the Elder Artifact, the Measure. So you have to wonder if that's going to come into play at all in this, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this is a bit of a brief summary on exactly what happened in Desperate Times. Now, going back to Desperate Times, your big issue with that quest is that, you know, it was all decided for you and you were, you know, pretty much just witnessing it unfold. And, you know, as a player of an MMORPG, you didn't have the ability to choose.
Yeah. Yep.
And the thing I'm wondering for you is, do you think there'll be anything in this Desperate Measures that will redeem that for you? And we'll leave the actual exercise of reading this post to the listeners.
You know, I find it incredibly hard. I think I'm a minority. I think a lot of people actually really, really like the quest. I don't know. I have to be honest. I don't expect it to redeem itself. It might be more my fault than, you know, this quest's fault. Like, the quest itself might be fine, but it feels... It has so much to make up for. The other quest, it really pulled me out of the immersion a lot.
Yeah.
And it has made the story just not stick with me. And that's gonna make it really hard to immerse myself in this quest as well.
And the last we saw in that quest, of course, was Karapak and the Dragonkin flying off to Anachronia with the needle.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had this discussion on the roundtable, and I said, yeah, you know, I think there was some time manipulation there because of what happened in Desperate Times with using the needle and the fact that when you first get to Anachronia, or rather you completed that Stormbreaker event last year, the big demon guy, what's the demon teacher's name again?
The demon teacher?
Yeah, the lesser demon teacher guy with the glasses. Mr. Mordo.
That's not a demon.
What is he then? He's a lesser demon. He's a lesser demon.
Mr. Mordaunt?
Yeah, Mr. Mordo. I thought he was a lesser demon.
Mr. Mordo is a very old, friendly, and wise draconic professor.
Oh, so he's a dragon. Okay, whoops.
Race, fairy dragon / red dragon.
Oops. And here I thought he was a lesser demon. Maybe it's because he was red. Anyways.
Can't judge someone just by the color of their skin, Shane.
All right. But no, I think there's definitely something timey-wimey going on there, so with the needle and that. So just have to wait and see what happens in Desperate Measures and if there's any illumination on that. Okie dokie. But yes, Desperate Measures in just under 2 weeks now.
Yeah, it's interesting. Mixed feelings about it.
Yeah. Yeah. All righty. Well, let's move on to our questions. But before we do that, I'll just take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters for this week because, you know, you guys do mean the world to us and you make all that we do here entirely possible. So I'd like to thank this week Brock H, Cameron, Cass, CGB900, Christian S, Diana, Duramax, Jade Gizmo, JW, James W, Jason S, Joe M, John P, Kyle, Mr. Ling, Nora, Our Memories, Rastafa, Ricky A, Rippeth, Samantha R, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, Zant, and Zez. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly does mean the world to us. And in case you're wondering what this is all about, just check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/RSBNB. And there, for as little as $1 a month, you can sign up. You get it to support the podcast, and you can help fund the costs for hosting and production of the show. But more importantly, you gain a mention in our show notes, early access to them, ability to join in on the roundtable discussions, vote in our Patreon polls, and of course, you get access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits, including the monthly bit that we just did on player input through the ages. And that's all for as little as $1 a month. If you want to go up to $3 a month, you get a special VIP rank on Discord, mentioned on the podcast at the start of the month, and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show. And for $5 a month, you'll receive a shout-out each and every week on the podcast. And, of course, you'll gain access to those clips that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And, of course, in addition to all of those benefits, we have our monthly bit. We have our Inside RSBNB Update interview, which this month was a discussion with David, getting to know our resident PVM expert. The Round Table, which we recorded last weekend, and the readback is out and posted on Patreon for those of you guys who weren't able to be there. And Movie Night as well, which this month will be Rocky IV, which will be happening this coming Monday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. And of course, pay attention to the Patreon feed if you want to join for that one. So you can find out about all this and more at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everyone. All right. So, Mr. Ling brings up a very important topic that was revealed at the tail end of last week after we had recorded the podcast. And, you know, this week, the thing is, he asks, how will you guys be doing the beach happy hours and weekends with no temperature increase? And, you know, this is, of course, referring to the beach event that will be coming back this following Monday, the 20th of July. And, you know, I think we have to ask that question. You know, what are we going to be doing or using our resets for?
I'm going to be turning the whole place upside down to learn what magic air conditioning trick they use to make that happen.
Yeah.
Because I would really like to not increase my own temperature while it's being hot outside, because the temperatures here the last few days have been very unpleasant. So that's what I'll be doing.
Yeah. And, you know, same way as it's always been at the beach, you can eat that ice cream to lower your temperature, or on the weekends, the heat wave, you can just, you know, keep skilling all through that and not, of course, have to worry about it. Beach will be in game from July 20th to August 10th. And, of course, the Dungeoneering Hole will be back. There's going to be the highlighted activities every 15 minutes where you get 10% XP. And, of course, with everything else, there's going to be a whole boatload of new cosmetics available this year, including the Leveler Wand and Bucket Orb, Classy Collar of the Sea Trident, and the Shark Bait Spear. There's also, of course, the new, you know, we started the show off by talking about TikTok.
Oh boy.
You ready to launch your Runestagram career? With the new selfie emote?
Oh. No. Oh. Oh my goodness. In a few months, we'll have selfie sticks, and they'll be like on Varric Museum.
That's from the Christmas event.
Yeah, exactly. And there will be a sign on Varric Museum: no selfie sticks allowed.
Oh. Hey, we can't go to the museums in real life, so we can go to the museum in RuneScape and use a selfie stick.
Gosh.
But I'll be doing the Dungeoneering Hole, because I despise training Dungeoneering.
I don't actually mind Dungeoneering that much. It's not that slow.
No,
I find
it's not.
Actually, I find it a lot of fun to do. In a, if you're like with a group of five that doesn't care about efficiency too much, but also isn't a bunch of lazy bumps, I find it a lot of fun. Like when there was a period where we had a lot of dungeoneering going on in our clan, I would often just tag along and learned a lot about dungeoneering that way. It was a lot of fun. Doing the dungeoneering hall is really tempting to get those last few levels that I need. I'm 115 right now. Of course, 117 would be nice for the last Master Quest Cape drop.
Yeah.
As if I ever am going to do all the PVM requires for that. of course, 120 for the Comp Cape. As if I'm ever going to do the PVM requirements for that. Yeah, but like, I'm also going to need a whole bunch of tokens anyway for dungeoneering. So if I get all the XP and then I don't have the tokens,
right?
At that point, I still have to do dungeoneering.
Yeah.
So it really comes down to what's there, though.
I go back to this, and I really wish that Elite Dungeons was a good dungeoneering training method.
Oh, but it is if you hit the PVM.
Yeah. But I mean, even, like, you have to be pretty well-versed to be able to solo the Elite Dungeons.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm talking about, you know? Not necessarily getting the
It would be nice if there were maybe, like, mid-level PVM dungeons.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, that's aside from the beach. So dungeoneering
it comes down to the skills that we can train there. I think, remember correctly, it used to be fishing, which honestly I don't need to do more fishing. Like that's one of the few skills that I really, really don't need experience in.
Yeah.
I got a lot of that for getting 120 invention.
You will be able to train agility with the terror bird racing. Hook a duck with hunter. Sandcastle building for construction. Fishing, farming with palm trees, barbecues for cooking, range with the coconut shy guy, bodybuilding with strength, and beach ball rolling with agility, plus the dungeoneering hole. And of course, Claudia will be back.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that I don't really need, like, that's sort of the sad thing. I don't need experience.
Yeah, I don't need any of these either.
I mean, farming, I guess, but I'm not really having trouble motivating myself to do farming.
Yeah, farming's pretty good.
I'm actually looking at my level right now. I'm 112 farming, which, wow, that's actually pretty good. And
I'll take some credit for that.
Yeah, no, but like, it has never felt like a grind to me. It's always been like little daily increments, and they sort of add up over time.
Yeah.
So I don't feel the need to grind farming.
So like dungeoneering hole makes the most sense, I think, but you lose out on the tokens.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what do you need the tokens for aside from the advanced gold accumulator, which I'm already at 1.2 mil, which really isn't that far away.
That one, of course, for comp, I think for comp or comp T. Yeah, it might be trimmed comp. You need all the upgrades on the Ring of Kinship.
Yeah. Of course.
Which is a big deal. I don't even have the ones that I really should have to increase my DPS.
Right.
Let's be honest. So, right. Those are really good as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
I'm going for the advanced gold accumulator right now because there is this really annoying gap on my tool belt that has it.
Yeah. I'm leaning, of course, dungeoneering, but I think construction is one that people always pick because I think it's a given at some point in the future construction will go to 120, and construction is annoying to train. And then of course there's the question of Iron Man, how Iron Man feel about this, because Iron Man can take part in this and get free construction training.
So, they can also choose not to take part in it.
There you go. Personally, I think I'm more excited about the selfie emote.
I'm just sad about that. But I'm being my grumpy old self again. So,
well, you can either have a choice. You can either have TikTok for the RuneScape account, or you can have your selfie emoting game.
Then I would go for the selfie emote.
There you go. Thank you, Mr. Link, for that question. I wanted to discuss the beach, and that gave us a perfect opportunity to do so. Next up from Sunset Fish, have you ever been lured or scammed? They say, I lost my first magic seed because I was lured on the edge of the wilderness before the safety barrier was put in.
That is a good question. I do not think I have ever been lured or scammed.
There was once a time back in the day, I think I was buying bones, and this is before the Grand Exchange. I was selling bones, and it was supposed to be 300K, but I missed a zero, and it was wound up being 30,000 instead. So I was shortchanged a bit, and this is back in the day when 300K was a lot. But I've never been wilderness lured or anything to that effect before. And, you know, looking back, I think that was my biggest one was that zero episode that we had here.
Yeah.
And there was also the time back, way, way, way back after we first started playing. My account was hacked once, believe it or not, back in the
Shane.
Day. I know.
You shouldn't use 12881288 both in your username and as your password.
That wasn't my password. My password was, I think, 7 or 8 characters at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I haven't the slightest idea of how that would have worked because, you know, I don't think I got phished. I don't think I had a keylogger because I ran all the anti-malware and anti-safety
questions. Recovery questions?
Could be. I don't even know if this was when they had recovery questions in place back in the day, honestly. I don't know if they always had recovery questions. But, and you know, this is something I think that we look at differently in today's era. Because We don't really think of people being lured or scammed today, do we? But it's still a very, very common occurrence, I think.
I think we have reached... what is a word for it? Is it digital literacy or something like that? There's a really fancy word, which means we are pretty familiar with the patterns of like the web and what can happen and the dangers and all that stuff. So, you know, when I get told that, you know, they have witnessed my account and noticed a lot of maturity and responsibility, I instantly know what to do. Younger people, I think, get it a bit more these days. Like when I first came onto the internet, I was probably as naive as could be.
Yeah, and you know, modern email accounts help with that too, from getting phished.
I think it's becoming a part of nurturing your children as well. Like people, I mean, it's shocking how young people are when they get their first phone. You know, I did not get an internet connection that my parents couldn't actively monitor by me sitting in the same room as them until I reached like 16 or 17 years old. Like I was like last year or so of middle school.
That's good.
And even then. Yeah, no, I think that's probably a reasonable age as well. It's not that I didn't have access to the internet before that.
Yeah. And you compare this with people who, you know, just give their kids an iPad and turn them loose.
Yeah. You know,
but we're not parents.
Oh no! I don't want to go here and judge parenting or anything, but it scares me to see how young children are, and I hope that you know this digital literacy I was talking about is part of their sort of growing up, and that they learn about these dangers.
Yeah,
because you hear a lot of things. But yeah, I mean, I hear still hear stories about people being lured or scammed. I think we have grown up and sort of grown past that naivety, but I still think it exists.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think modern tools also help as well with that, because, you know, if you have an Apple account, they have email that monitors phishing. Gmail does that too, by way of the spam filter. And, you know, fun fact on this, in the last 72 hours, I've been watching this number tick up. In the last 72 hours, my spam count has ticked up from less than 100 to north of 300.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean there's scammers tools get that more sophisticated as help well, with right? That.
And, you know, I think also on the RuneScape side, there's lots of education that Jagex has done too on that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we also have Authenticator now, which I have to say, again, if you're not running Authenticator, you should be, because that is the number one way to protect your account.
Yes. So.
All right. I don't know that I have anything else left to say on that one, but, you know, I think it's happened to pretty much everybody at some point in time.
I can't remember, but maybe I've blocked that memory.
Okay, do you want me to log in and scam you right now?
No, I do not think I need that experience.
All righty. If you guys want to send your own questions and email them to questions@rsbnb.com, or you can, of course, leave us a DM on Twitter @rsbnb, or just post them on the forums at update.rsbnb.com/ask. Moving on into tech news. Apple wins the backing of the EU General Court over their $13 billion euro tax bill. And this is referring to a ruling by the European Commission that Apple should pay 13 billion euros to the Irish government, because there was something amuck with the way Apple was reporting their taxes in Ireland. Because that is where I think Ireland is where Apple's European corporation is registered.
Yep. And it is. A lot of tech companies are registered in Ireland.
And, you know, when this ruling first came out, we thought, oh, this is something to try and get one of these large corporations that people see as, you know, always skirting the bounds of acceptability to finally pay up. And, you know, the general perception amongst people over here is that in the EU – regulations are a lot more strict when it comes to business taxation and, you know, businesses operating ethically from a balance sheet perspective. But lo and behold, here, the General Court said that by today's judgment, the General Court annuls the contested decision because the Commission did not succeed in showing the requisite legal standard that there was an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here, I personally believe that, you know, when a court says something, that court decision has to be upheld. And, you know, Tim Cook speaking out on this back in 2016 perhaps got the most animated he ever did, and he called this decision total political crap.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, here, Apple and Tim Cook are proven right. And, you know, I don't know that this has any benefit or drawback to the consumer on this front. I just think it's interesting that Apple's business practices were even able to win in the EU.
Yeah. See, the challenge is I'm of two minds of this, right? It's going to get a bit political, sorry, but like on the one side, I don't really like the EU trying to get its fingers in everything, right? It's not a country. It's an organization of countries.
It's a bureaucratic body.
It's a bureaucratic body. Like, they should stay out of this stuff. On the other hand, this particular case does reveal a real problem. And that is that tax havens kind of exist in the EU, right? Like, Luxembourg, I think that's where Amazon is based.
Yep.
The Netherlands and Ireland are very beneficial for companies to billion tax-wise, which means that, well, those countries attract these companies, so they get like the biggest part of the pie when it comes to the entire EU. Because once you're in Ireland, you can do business in the entire EU, because that's, you know, the whole shtick of this yeah. this union. So that's sort of where the problem comes in, right? Like, not like most countries in the EU aren't benefiting from these tech companies being here, and that is where this problem comes in.
Exactly, because if you expand this out, and if Apple was doing something that was closer to the fabric of society, like Facebook is, you'd then have to ask serious questions about the way that's operating. Because if you yeah. look at a Facebook, for example, Facebook recently has actually pretty much all but declared themselves a sovereign nation and had the idea behind themselves that they can do whatever they want, wherever they want. And we shouldn't worry about this because of Apple, in my opinion. We should worry about this because of Facebook and other companies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the story we should take away from this at the end of the day.
Yeah. I mean, the EU is currently heavily pushing for something like a digitax.
Which, quite frankly, it's none of their business. That should fall to the individual member nations.
Yeah. Though, again, it's super complicated, right? Like, I completely accept that it's not that easy, because, you know, it is very much in the interest of Ireland and the Netherlands and Luxembourg to keep these tax rates low,
yep.
to keep the countries there,
yep.
the companies there. So it's a super tricky situation that I'm not quite good at articulating right now. That being said, you know, I think there's a responsibility for these large companies themselves. Like, I would, if anything, I would like to ask them to, you know, to take responsibility here. Like, it is completely in their right to find business constructions that are the most profitable. And the primary goal of a company should always be to maximize profit. That's the whole free economy is sort of centered around the very idea of maximizing
yeah.
profit.
Yeah. So if you could spend an hour with Tim Apple, what would you have to say?
It's really hard, because I can't fault Apple for doing what they do. And in a way I also can't fault the governance for what they're trying to do. In a way I would like the governments and these tech companies to just sit around a table and be like, okay, you know, we know you don't like a lot of tax. We would like to actually tax you for the work you do. But we'd also like to do it, like, if you help us do it in a fair way, then, you know, it won't maybe be as bad as if we figure it out ourselves. Like, make that conversation, try to come up with something fair that makes sure that these companies are paying the taxes they need in the countries they operate in, where at the same time, we don't just block off this whole thing with bureaucracy.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, here in Canada, the government wants anybody who runs an ad on the internet, so Facebook and Google and Twitter perhaps being a lesser player in this one, to pay tax to the government. They also want Netflix to pay tax based on content, so that would, of course, get passed on to people who make our $14.99 Netflix subscriptions for in HD even bigger. So there is a proper way to do this and a not proper way mm-hmm. of doing this, and that's a discussion that has to be had on this one, and that's why we need to watch yeah. this ruling as it goes forward.
Yeah,
but we're going to move on to something else right now, which many people probably had a good amount of experience with over the past few months. Of course, everybody knows Zoom. This week, Zoom announces, especially the Zoomers.
Yeah,
they have a new screen, a 27-inch monitor that is a touch screen, and its sole purpose is to integrate into your existing workflow. You can use it as an extra monitor. You can annotate notes on it. You can annotate presentations. And of course, it's got the microphone and webcam in it to operate Zoom calls. So the idea behind this is that, you know, you can pick up one for your home audience, and you could effectively set up your home office and use this as a way of doing all your Zoom meeting calls. And, you know, it's called D10 Me, which, you know, it's really interesting.
Yeah, so D10, I looked a bit into the company. Apparently it has been, it looks like it might have been around for a longer time, but I also can't find any trace of it from before they collaborated with Zoom. So
you know what that means. This is just a company that Zoom spun off.
I think so. It's really hard to say. Their headquarters is in San Jose, in the Silicon Valley. So it's really hard to say. I'm not gonna make any claims without evidence.
Yeah. But for $599, you get this 27-inch display, and it's an all-in-one video conferencing suite that can also be used as a extra monitor on this. It's got three wide-angle cameras and an 8 microphone array to help with noise reduction.
I struggle understanding what the target audience is for a product like this.
I think it's the home office worker who just started working from home.
I guess, but why $600? Bucks? What is it?
Yeah.
I don't know. $600?
$600 US. And, you know.
Yeah, so $600. Who is going to pay that?
Right. And, I mean, like, you can get the same deal with an iPad, basically, with iPad multitasking today.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why would you. It feels like, why would I have a dedicated thing for meetings at home? My laptop is perfectly capable of doing meetings.
But it doesn't have a touchscreen and you can't collaboratively annotate with people. I mean,
yeah.
But how many people need that day to day, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I've needed that once or twice and, you know, I'll get by. Putting something like this in a meeting room, in an office, makes sense, right? That's where you put these dedicated devices.
And they do have other products that are designed for offices and the education market.
But Zoom is not from its get-go an enterprise product. It's used by people outside of enterprises. Enterprise integrations will probably prefer going for your Microsoft with like the whole Teams suite.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Or maybe Slack, or Google has an entire enterprise suite as well. Like, those have integrated solutions. Why would you go with Zoom? Would you want to have Zoom watch into all your meetings, potentially confidential meetings in your company?
Oh, governments are already using it, by the way. Government in Canada is using Zoom for our virtual parliament sittings.
Uh-huh.
Granted, that's still, by definition, a public forum, but they're still using it. So it's got to be in use elsewhere. But you mentioned that key word, enterprise. I mean, you said it numerous times. They do have other solutions for that specific audience in meeting rooms on here. So this one is specifically aimed at the home audience, which makes it a little bit more odd.
Yeah, it feels like a very niche product. Like, if you wanted to get something for personal use, you'd get one of these, like, new smart displays, right?
Yeah.
Like, I know Google has one. I think it's called the Nest Hub.
Yeah, that's
which is like
right.
A little screen. Like, that's the kind of stuff you would use.
Sorry, go ahead. Finish.
I think Amazon has one as well.
Have you also heard the thought that the big surprise coming with the Apple Silicon-based Mac laptops when the first one launches this fall will be that they have touchscreens. Because if you look at macOS Big Sur, everything is spaced out more as if it would have to be, as if you were designing for touch.
It wouldn't surprise me.
And, you know, if you do that, you smash this entire market, because you have that and you have the camera quality now of an iPhone with all the ARM-based chips in there and whatnot.
Oh, but like, this market is already there, right? Apple is behind on that.
Yeah.
If you want a good touchscreen laptop, you can get the Surface. I currently have a Surface laptop.
Except you'll want the Intel version, not the ARM version.
Yes, I have an Intel laptop. There's the Surface Pro, which is the hybrid device, of which there is an ARM version and an Intel version. So, you know, that's also Dell XPS, I think. And there's Asus devices.
With touchscreens.
Chromebooks.
So the point is...
There's Chromebooks with touchscreens.
So the point is, what is the purpose of this $599 product when someone's laptop that they might have got this year or last year already has this built in?
That's my question. They say it can act as a monitor. Yes. Is it going to be a good monitor? Probably not. For business reasons, maybe it doesn't really matter that it isn't like a normal monitor, but...
It's a 27-inch 1080p display.
That's... Like, that's nice, but not really great
you
either.
Want, yeah, optimally, you know, if you're looking at 27-inch, you want 1440p at the minimum and preferably 4K.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, like... A webcam isn't a big deal to put on your screen. It's actually, I like that I have a separate webcam, because after I'm done using it, it goes back in the drawer so that, you know, why unplug it? Because webcams. So, yeah.
It's just a product that doesn't make sense. And I don't know, maybe someone in our base will be able to figure that out.
But it does show that, you know, Zoom got a whole bunch of momentum from this crisis, and they're using it. And part of me wants them to be successful, because it's never bad to have another player in the market. Competition is good.
Yeah.
But they got off to such a bad start. I don't know.
All right. Our next piece of tech news goes back to the early 2000s. And did you play The Sims?
Play The Sims, yeah.
This is before online gaming was a thing. And The Sims was, of course, a game where you could build a family and put them in a house and watch them and see exactly what they would do.
I thought you were going to say you could put them in a swimming pool and then remove the ladder into the swimming pool.
Oh, you did that too?
Yeah, I did that too.
Yeah, I did that. Horrible.
I did that to guests who would come visit that I didn't like.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Did you model the actual family after your real family?
I think I've done that, yeah. But it was really hard because the first Sims didn't have any children, I think.
Right.
It was just adults, so.
Right. Anyways, we're not talking about a new game of The Sims, but EA has said that The Sims will get its own reality TV show called The Sims Sparked. It'll be on the TBS channel in the United States in partnership with Turner Sports, E-League, and BuzzFeed Multiplayer. Now,
so when I first heard this, I thought this was going to be like a Big Brother-like TV show with people stuffed in a house. They could put like little CGI diamonds above their head. You could control what they do from the internet. Oh boy, I was wrong. But the idea was pretty funny.
It premieres on July 17th. And what is the idea then if it is not that?
You didn't actually look at the trailer?
No, I didn't watch the trailer yet. Like, I could play it here. I don't know if it'll give us a copyright complaint, so that's why I don't want to play it right now. But
that's fine. I can quickly explain. So it's actually completely different than I expected. So actually, what they do is which is like, first I was really skeptical of us doing this as tech news. A little bit of producer behind the scenes here. And then I looked at the trailer and I actually wanted to bring this in because I think it's quite a nice concept. So what people are doing in there, so there's different teams that come in and then they use The Sims,
the game,
to tell a story. They edit a story together based on characters and video material out of The Sims, which gets then shown to a jury who, you know, judges how well that story is told.
Fascinating.
It's a very different kind of esports all of a sudden, isn't it? Like it's much more about, it's like your MasterChef but also with a strong creative factor of, you know, telling a story, which I think is great because I have always seen games as a tool to express yourself.
There you go. There you go.
Making games, you can express yourself. I think making games is an art form. Could have a whole discussion about that. But a lot of games that you play are in themselves creative tools. The Sims, you know, there isn't really a way to beat the game, right?
It just goes on and on and on.
It's a playground. A playground. It's a sandbox.
You could do the same kind of thing with this. The same, if this format is successful, you know, the other game I see being very usable for this is Minecraft.
Exactly. You know, and I like the trailer is, of course, it might be misleading, and it only shows like short fragments.
Well, we're going to actually have a look at this because it's a TV show, so it should be okay.
Like one of the examples is actually about family bonds. I was like, that's a really nice theme to make something about.
And one of the judges is a past American Idol finalist, Raven Owen, who's apparently been playing The Sims since he was in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, based on how close these people are, I'm guessing it was filmed pre-pandemic and it's just unveiling now. But this does raise the interesting point, and one thing we've seen a lot of recently, a lot of shows, of your reality shows and whatnot, like, you know, the American Idols and the America's Got Talents and the Amazing Races and Survivors, really can't produce at this point. And that opens the door to new arrivals, and what arrival has been sitting here waiting to be invaded on for the last number of years, but the various forms of esports that we see on Twitch and whatnot, which normally we see as, you know, the competitive play in Overwatch or League of Legends or something to that effect.
Yeah.
But this is an entirely different spin on that, and that's something that could be done virtually if they had to.
I love how this is, like, it's going to be pretty mainstream, right? Like, I don't want to say super mainstream, but, it's gonna
just to be clear, I haven't even heard of the channel TBS.
All right, you don't have younger sisters then.
You guys have TBS over there?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So, but still, you know, it is going to reach a new audience that is a bit more mainstream than gamers. And it is not going to come to them with, let's be honest, sweaty dudes in a race chair, you know, playing a game, like, because that's sort of the stereotype, and it sadly it's sort of true. But this is taking a completely different spin of games. It's going to show a completely different side, which is,
yeah,
the storytelling, yeah, and the creativity,
yeah,
which I adore. And, you know, I have a lot of things to say about EA. I have a lot of things to say about The Sims.
Are you going to watch this?
No.
Okay.
I mean, no.
All right.
it's not for me. You know, I'm not the target audience.
Sure.
The personalities in the trailer.
Yeah.
That's not really the kind of stuff that I'm interested in. Like, no, it reaches a different audience than I am.
So what you're saying is we need to make some version of a Clan Quest reality show, stream it, and become famous.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's not what I'm saying, but, you know, I actually just like that people are taking this to new, in new ways.
Yeah, I love seeing the innovation on the platform. There are no ifs, ands, or buts on that. All right, let us move on to the achievements then. Starting off, we got a good number of them this week. First up, we have Arctic Zone with 99 ranged on the 14th, Mesgram with 99 woodcutting on the 14th, Nordic Falcon with 99 prayer. Thaxi also got 120 prayer on the 13th, while the Fire Bro got 99 invention. Then we have Arendelle 20 with 99 crafting, Mike Strike 3 with 99 Constitution, and finally Skeets with 99 Archaeology on the 11th.
Mike Strike 3 got 99 Strength on July 10. Also on July 10, Ozazoyo got 99 Archaeology.
Woo!
And Zodiac Height also got 99 Archaeology on July 10. Moving on to I can't even say the month. July 9, we have Dom the Mexican got 99 Hunter, Panacius 120 Woodcutting, and Questcaping got 99 Farming. Congratulations, all of you.
Nicely done, everyone. Nicely done. All right, this is a pick of the week that you have that I've been waiting for you to talk about. So let's dive right into it.
Yeah, so... I don't even know how to introduce this. We talk a lot about the design in RuneScape. Like, the UI is a common one, game design, all that stuff. But the truth is that almost everything we use in our day-to-day life was once designed. And we still live in an era where thinking about how our products look is really important, whether it's games, a website, or an actual tool you hold in your hand. And that's sort of it's almost a classic at this point, isn't it?
It really is. It really is.
It's
because, you know, we approach it from a user experience side, but I've heard of it used for others too. So I'll let you talk about it.
Yeah, so my pick for this week is a book by Donald Norman, and it's called The Design of Everyday Things. It is really aimed really at anyone who does design, though even if you don't, I still think it is a super interesting read to see about what the philosophy is around designing things. So, you know, I think one of the biggest lessons it comes is, you know, if you, like, one of the examples, right, that most people probably have figured out is you go on a vacation, you go in a hotel, and you arrive all sweaty, and you're like, I'm going to take a shower, and you cannot understand how to control the shower. That probably has happened to you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Is that your fault?
No, not at all.
Exactly. It is never the fault of the user. It is always the fault of the product for not being immediately clear how it works. And users are really like, oh, I must be too stupid to use this product, and really good at giving themselves blame. But most of the time, it's really the design of things. And this book really goes into sort of the different aspects of it, the psychology behind it, all that stuff. And it really goes into how to understand your users and turn your... Like, I really like the examples of this book, how sometimes minimal small design changes can make a really big difference in how people understand your product. And this is something that, you know, I always sort of knew intuitively, but reading about it has sort of made it more explicit. And, you know, I think about this quite a lot. Like one of the interesting examples is I write code that other people have to use. And isn't writing an API also designing something?
We just need to explain what an API is quickly. It's basically an interface for programming that other programmers use to build things.
Yes. So basically I write a piece of code so that if somebody else wants to do something, I have already solved that something for them. They just call my code and I don't have to worry about doing it all from scratch. It's pretty fundamental part of programming that you can just reuse existing stuff. But sometimes these things are complex, so you need to provide like different configurations and options. And I have worked with so many APIs that are hard to use.
Yep.
Or yep. Are really hard to use in a wrong way. Yep. Or really easy to use in a wrong way.
Or just really low level that you need to do so much of recreating the wheel.
And the question then is, if I make a mistake by calling the wrong methods in the function, is that my fault? Or is that the fault of the person who designed the library? And this book gives like a really nice sort of overview of that. And I like the author wrote a few more things that, you know, I think emotional design is also by him. It's about why we love or hate things. You know, a bunch of stuff like that. And it has some really good lessons in there, I think, for everyone. I think if you read that and then go listen back to our episodes where we complain about the UI, I think you'll start recognizing some of the themes.
Exactly.
In what we say as well.
Exactly. And, you know, the title of it when it first came out in 88, because there's been numerous editions of it, was The Psychology of Everyday Things. And that's where it all comes together with that. And, you know, for me, it comes down to the simplest of examples, like door handles, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Like with a door handle, the design of the door handle, and you don't think about this, doesn't tell you if you push or pull. And a door handle that says push or pull on it is not a good door handle.
Nope.
Whereas if the design of the door handle can tell you what to do, then that's a good design. And it goes simpler even than that. And that's why when you – and, you know, I took a class on this and there was – I forget the name of the other book, but this by far was the most important one, and this is perhaps one of my favorite things that people can read, because it touches on, you know, you can look at it from a computer science user experience interaction design perspective. Mm-hmm. But you can also take this into the real world. And that's that important bridge that is missing with so many people who do things on the internet, whether it be building a website or writing a tool or doing whatever it might be on the internet, is that bridge that's missing that makes it accessible and have a good design that kind of just flows from that. And the fact that that's missing with so many people really, really bothers me. And you start seeing these things after you do some of this design, and especially after you read a book like this. And, you know, the importance of this book says it all, because I can't even remember the name of the other book I was going to mention that was also important, but this one had such a bigger impact in it that really informs one of the big pillars of interaction design. And that's, you know, partially why we're so harsh on Jagex when it comes to interaction design, because it's just like, oh, this just doesn't feel right. And when you start seeing these things, it's really annoying, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Like, that's sort of the risk with this. Like, once you start understanding this, it's, you can never unsee it. The beauty of this book is that it is all, it talks about, you know, yeah, doors, but the lessons apply to basically any field where you build things for other users. And a lot of our work is building things for other users in some way or another.
And there you have it. You know, this might be one of my favorite things that we've ever had on Pick of the Week, and we'll see exactly where this goes with Pick of the Year. But, you know, if you enjoy books, if you have a Amazon book account, the audiobook, Audible, yeah, that's what it's called. Forgot the name of it there for a second. If you read those, or, you know, you just have a book subscription anywhere, definitely check this out. So I'm going to double down on
it's
this.
It's not a big one. Like, you can get through it pretty quickly, and I really recommend it. And it's a fun read as well. Like, the examples are usually very amusing and told in a very entertaining manner. So,
yes. Alrighty. So moving on to what we've been up to. You know, nothing on RS aside from Yak Track. I'm progressing through that. I just finished an archaeology task of excavating 18 artifacts, which I think is Yak Track 35 or 34, something to that effect.
Sorry, which task?
Excavate 18 artifacts. I think that's Yak Track 34 or 35. I don't remember.
34, yeah.
Yeah. And I still have 7 skip tokens, and I forgot to mention this on the beach segment, but the beach is going to be a source of skip tokens.
Yeah. I'm not sure what I think of that, but...
I mean, it's entirely possible I can get to task 40 and call it done and then just skip everything once the beach comes out.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't have 7 skip tokens. I only have 3, so
that's because you didn't use Treasure Hunter.
I'm not quite that lucky, and I refuse to do so.
Yeah, but you know, aside from that, I've been having, you know, it feels grindy, but I have been having good fun with that one. For whenever crafting comes up, I've actually been doing crafting this time. Believe it or not, I've been going through my supply of red dragon hide and black dragon hide that I've gotten from, you know, various sources. I think the bulk of it came from Big Game Hunter, and I've been doing that. Mm-hmm. And I also had crafting catalysts lying around, which halves the amount of time it takes to do crafting.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I think those were Treasure Hunter at some point. So there's that. The farming tasks are always fun, but then you have the really asinine tasks of, you know, summoning or construction, is just kind of gross on that front, but that's what skips are for on there. So that's what I've been up to, and in doing so I actually hit 101 archaeology.
Very nice.
So how about you?
You know, not much different. I've been fishing and thieving throughout this episode.
Oh, and the play RuneScape tasks,
yeah, I have
fun
to admit. Oh God, get out of here. Yeah, no, just been doing the tasks. Yeah, it mixed feelings about it at this point. You know, I liked it back when it came out. Now it feels mostly grindy, and I'm still doing them, and I'm not sure why. And I felt like that before when I was logging into the game and just doing stuff without knowing why. And that was in the time that I still used Treasure Hunter, and I stopped doing it and had more fun with the game. So... I'm not sure what I think about Yak Track anymore. It's not what it used to be,
no.
Even though it's only the third.
No.
But I've never gotten as far as I am now. I'm currently on task 38. So that's not too bad. 39 is a freebie as well.
And then task 40 is going to be clues.
40 is going to be clues. After that, we'll have to see what happens.
Based on the way it looks, you got a fishing task at 41, unless you want to make 3,800 potions.
I just finished one that took me like 2 hours.
42 is smith 80 bane items or earn 1.2 million archaeology XP.
Yeah, for me, 1.2 archaeology XP is half. Oh, no, sorry. That's not actually that much.
No, it's not. It's like
That would only get me halfway to 95 from where I am now. So
I mean, you have the time. Like, this ends on August 2nd, I believe, and we're already in the high 30s. So
yeah, exactly. Like, honestly, I might.
This one feels like it's going faster.
I might actually just try and push my way to 42, and then just take that time to go back to archaeology and try and get, you know, that 1.2 million XP, which is a lot for me. But
when you're doing that, save all your soil for task 50, which is just to screen 6,500 soil.
Skip. That's going to be a skip.
Yeah, because the option on that is to smelt 5,300 Bane bars or higher.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, I started saving up my soil. And I now am at 38 where I can screen 3,000 soil. I don't
That's
have that
take
much.
You a while.
I'm not going to buy that much. So I'm doing the thieving side. So I saved up my soil for nothing. So I'm just going to screen that soon and see what materials I get out of it. And that's it really. That's basically it. I did get pretty lucky today. I got an entire Triskelion out of thieving.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah. So it's pretty lucky. So I'm going to go and open it up later. It's my little surprise for the end of today.
Nice. Alrighty, folks. Well, that's it for this episode of RSBNB Update. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back next week for more to discuss the beach and the run-up to Desperate Measures. But in the meantime, if you want full show notes, you can find that at update.rsbnb.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast on any number of podcast listeners out there, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, even YouTube. You know, subscribing's really good because it helps our metrics, but more importantly for you, it makes it so you don't ever miss an episode. So please do subscribe. And of course, you can also find us in game at Friends Chats, Bits Bytes, and our Discord at rsbnb.com/discord. So with that being said, we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.